You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Now, a guy who wanted to be in porn but didn't have the acting chops, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are cruising through a Monday night here. Frank Anderson, our old pal, is going to be here at 7:20. We're going to talk about Bob Dylan and cockfighting. I know, yet again, that's quite a combo. But Frank will be here. Always fun. Mark from Prairie du Sac says, oh, it's encephalitis, Conrad, is what we were trying to think of, the mosquito.
Oh, yep, okay.
The mosquito dealio. And Tom from Jackson says, Puxicani Phil out east or in Wisconsin? I asked this because I heard earlier today that one out east showed spring is soon on the way. I think there's only one Puxicani Phil because there's only one Puxicani. There are probably other groundhogs, but they're all just wannabes. Jim from Appleton says the groundhog in Sun Prairie didn't see his shadow, so only 40 days of winter. We're all kind of saying the same thing. That's a lot. That's like six more weeks of winter, 40 days. I don't know. I'm confused. But keep those texts coming. We'll figure this out together, folks. Jim also says, Jim from Kenosha says, sorry, I asked the question. I don't Google. I Schwabba. Oh, that's a rip on my name. A good-natured rip. I think Jim's done that before. He's commenting on what Eli and I were talking about before with our last names. Let us know how you feel about six more weeks of winter, folks. That's tonight's question, and we will read your text on the radio. Always great when you guys participate. We have a few more minutes here with our guest, Eli Wills. He's a Madison-based comedian. He also writes about comedy. He produces comedy shows, and he does sketch and improv. Is Atlas improv or sketch and improv?
Atlas is improv. Okay. We've done some sketch stuff in the past, but primarily an improv theater. Yeah, all improv. We're actually celebrating 21 years of improv.
Wow.
In Madison.
Okay.
This April. We always run a festival, the Endurance Improv Festival, where we do an hour of improv for every year that we've been around. We started the
Dear
festival
God.
13 hours in, and now it's starting to get ridiculous.
Oh, man. Where is that in Madison? What stage do you guys have? Do you have your own space?
Yeah, we've got our own space, 609 East Washington. We always joke it's tucked right in next to the five-star Korean barbecue place. So if you've seen the five-star Korean barbecue place, that's it. We're right next door. You can smell it. We share a door. So dinner and a show is the
that
advertisement.
Sounds like
right
a
there.
Great night to me. Yeah, I love Korean barbecue. So what do you prefer? Do you like improv or stand-up? What was harder to learn, Eli?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I started with improv, and I think, you know, people go different ways at it, where it's like, I started with improv because I was like, if I pay for a class, they have to let me on stage. That was kind of like my logic
right.
of like, you know, they can't deny me if I've given a service, but I like them both. Improv to me is a great way to just kind of get out of your head and start getting silly with it. I think stand up, when you get so fixated on the writing and the jokes and the punchlines, you know, you can, whenever I'm feeling rigid with that aspect of stand up, I go and do more improv so that I can, you know, kind of break out of that mold and go be a little sillier and get out of my head and start thinking so much. One of the stand-up comics I really like, a Chicago guy, Chris Higgins, he said this to me once. He was like, you got to get rid of the notion that you look cool up there. Stop trying to look cool up there.
Oh, nice.
And improv is a way that I go up there to be like, hey, man, I'm pretending to be a goat or something right now. It's like, I'm not, there's nothing, it may be entertaining, but there's nothing cool about this for sure.
Does your improv help your stand-up more, or does stand-up help your improv? Do they both help each other? And if so, which one helps more?
I think they both help each other. I think my improv helps my stand-up tremendously. A lot of stand-ups kind of stick their nose up at improv, but I think it gives you a skill set of being comfortable on stage and being able to go with the flow of whatever's happening at any point. Because what I always say, I'll give you a perfect example. The line I always say when you're improvising with a show is like, you have your jokes, but whatever happens during the show is the show. So you can't ignore what's happening in the room when a show is happening. One second. Oh crap. Just lost my power cord. If you guys heard that, but I'm back.
We didn't even notice. You're fine. Yeah.
Wouldn't even note it. Okay, perfect. So I was doing a show last month where a speaker actually fell from the ceiling, hit a guy on the head in the audience.
Oh no.
During my show. And thankfully he was okay. We didn't know that for the first 3 minutes or so. We, you know, wanted to make sure that he was all right before you start making fun of him. But it's a perfect example of what am I going to do? Just go start telling my jokes that I wrote after that happened? We all just experienced this crazy thing that just happened.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Like, let's talk about the crazy thing that just happened with this speaker falling on, hitting on the head. So I ended up just kind of riffing and talking to people in the audience and joking for like 15 minutes on the speaker and the injured guy. And that's all improv. And that's like the way the improv helps my stand up is when I do a show like that, the ideal version of a stand up set for me is the audience doesn't know which parts I wrote and which parts I'm coming up with on the spot.
Oh, nice.
I would love to be able to effortlessly go back in between those so that when an audience watches that, they go, oh, how'd you come up with that on the spot? Oh, it's a joke that I've written. Or how did you, make the audience feel so present that everything is happening right now?
Okay. Given that you're doing improv and stand up, and writing, obviously, and all the other stuff you're doing, do you have influences that kind of went that same route, like Bob Odenkirk, who did Second City and did stand-up? Like, are there people you kind of hope to model your career after?
Yeah, the one in particular is this guy named Rory Scovel. I don't know if you've heard of him before,
but he's got
a bunch of Netflix specials, a bunch of HBO stuff. And one of the most iconic things he ever did kind of in this realm is he did a show that his first initial special is called Rory Scovel Tries Stand-Up for the Very First Time. And of course, you know, you're not supposed to do a special when you've not done it before, but he did this thing where he went up on stage and he was like, I'm going to do an hour of stand-up. I'm going to improvise an hour of stand-up every night, 7 nights in a row. And I'm going to do it the first night. And then the second night, I'm going to keep the stuff that works and doesn't work. And I'm going to keep the stuff that works and doesn't work. And then let's see if I can just like superpower this. Can I write an hour of stand-up that I want to film in a week of just brute forcing it every single week? And what he discovered during that process, he was like, oh, it was more fun to just make stuff up every single night, that he ultimately ended up not using stuff one show from the other. Because if you can be so present and do the show as it's intended, you can write stuff and discover that way.
That sounds, it could go two ways.
Like, yeah.
I would watch it and think it was incredibly brilliant, or I'd go, oh God, great experiment, but get me out of this. Like, how did it go?
Ultimately, it worked for him. Well, of course, that's the risk. Like I always say, people are like, you know, you get more nervous doing improv or stand up. It's like, well, improv, if it goes poorly, it's like, what did you expect? I just came up with this right now.
Right.
Stand up, it's more vulnerable because it's like, I was at home at my desk writing this down saying, I bet they'll love this. And then I came in and you hated it. And it's like, all right.
Great.
So it's two different things. But ultimately, you know, he made it work. And I really, you know, just respect that approach. And maybe I just respect that approach because I've got to force myself to write more like everybody else. But
yeah, and you appreciate when people take risks too or try something different. And that's how I felt about the movie Emilia Perez. I was like, all right, there's a lot going on here, but it was a good swing.
Try something, yeah.
You said you just took your first trip to LA. Did you get up on stage out there? How did it go?
I did. It's funny. I did kind of the fake thing to grind it out early in the business. I just took 2 weeks. I got some friends out there. I got some couches to stay on. And what I did is I texted everybody I know saying, I'm going to be out here 2 weeks doing shows. Didn't have any shows booked. Would love to do anything else you have on.
Right, right. I might have a few nights I could still work in. Yeah.
Whatever nights I'll squeeze you in to do whatever you got. Thankfully it worked out really well. I got connected to some friends. I did a great show. It was After Midnight with Ron Lynch. Was the show at the Elysian Theater, which was super eccentric and super fun. And I got to get up stage and do it. And then it worked out really well. I did a couple of run of shows at this hostel in Santa Monica.
Oh, wow.
Where the type of show you get when you're BSing your way on the shows, the guy booked it. He's like, hey man, this is going to be a lot of fun. We do it every week, but it's at this hostel. So like, there will be a big crowd there, but most of them won't speak English. And I'm like, okay, perfect.
My kind of crowd, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, perfect. I can roll with this. So obviously, if you want an experience in, you know, not being able to do your jokes and trying to be entertaining for people, you know, wanting to have a good time, I got them singing, you know, Beverly Hills. I got them singing songs. So
nice.
It went really well. And then the guy, he was like, hey, we do this, you know, three more times while you're in town, so come and do it. So I got to do that hostel show for a bunch of non-native English speakers a bunch of times, which was a blast.
Any stage time helps, right? That's well, great.
yeah. Eli well, Wills. The second time I went back, they spoke English, and I was like, you betrayed me.
I tailored my set to complete and utter chaos. And you,
I've been Duolingoing Spanish for the last 3 days trying to be ready for this.
Check out Eli Wills February 13th at the Working Draft Beer Company. He's going to do a show there with a guest we had on the program a couple weeks ago named Alicia Witt. Sounds like a great show. That's February 13th in Madison. Check out his work anywhere. Can they follow you? You got socials, Eli?
Follow me on Instagram. That's the big one. Eli Wills, E-L-I-W-I-L-Z, and sillystreetcomedy.com. Sillystreetcomedy.com. That's got the newsletter. Would love it's useful even if you're not in Madison. So check it out. There's a lot of good comedy on there.
Outstanding. Do you have a review you could give us in 60 seconds or less of The Brutalist?
Very interesting. If I didn't know ahead of time, I would have thought it was a biopic of a real guy. First half sets you up. It's one of those worlds. If you want to be immersed in a world, it will immerse you in the world. Go check it out.
And it's up for a lot. Drew a lot of Oscar nominations. I have not seen it yet, so I. It's interesting. Yeah. I think you said you were the only one in the theater too.
Yes, I went on a Friday matinee.
That must have been a great intermission. You hang out with with yourself. Just
I know the intermission happened, and I was like, "All right, let's just start it, guys."
Yeah, I have this kind of stamina. I can sit for another 2 hours. All right, Eli. Great meeting you. Best of luck. Don't be a stranger, and keep us posted, my friend. It was great to meet you.
Hey, great to meet you, Pete. Thanks for having me on the show. Thank you, Conrad, and we will see you all here at Late Night here soon. Nightlight real soon.
Absolutely. All right, Eli Pills, check him out in Madison. And check him, follow his socials, because it's always fun to know where someone is playing when you go check him out. Hey, let's do the Grammy clip from The Simpsons. Okay, so the Grammys were last night, folks. There's a great episode of The Simpsons where Homer wins a Grammy in a barbershop quartet, but he's still depressed, and here is that clip now.
Here's that champagne you ordered, Mr. Simpson.
Oh, thanks. Here.
Wow, an award statue! Oh, it's a Grammy.
Hey, don't throw your garbage down here.
That's Homer. Check out the Barbershop Quartet episode of The Simpsons. Outstanding stuff. All right, when we come back, our pal Frank Anderson will be here. We're going to talk about Bob Dylan and cockfighting. Where, anywhere in the world, folks, where can you hear that conversation all within 40 minutes? It's Peach Wabbit and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Says, Pete, have you ever interviewed comedian Mary Mack, who is from Wisconsin? She has a sort of up north comedy style. Yes, Tom, I have. Mary has been on the show, and she is on this Thursday, so very well timed to text my friend. Tune in Thursday night at 6:35. Mary will be making our popcorn pick of the week, and she is always so much fun and absolutely hilarious. So thank you for the text. It's my pleasure now to welcome one of our Nightlight frequent flyer favorites, Mr. Wisconsinology. He knows more about Wisconsin than my pinky. I think I got that wrong, but he'll get it. Frank Anderson joins us now on Nightlight. Frank, how are you?
Wonderful, Pete. What was that? What was my music this time? That was excellent.
That was just for you. That was Bill Haley, and it's called Joey's Song.
Wow.
And that was going to be my first question, Frank, is because I saw that you posted about Bill Haley being great dance music recently on Facebook. And I didn't know if your Joey's Song event every year in Madison, or one you partake in, had anything to do with that song or was derived from that song somehow.
No, not at all.
Wow, really?
No, not at all. Okay. In fact, it'll be news to them when I forward that song. No, it's a charity for Joey is the son of Mike Gamal. Mike Gamal puts on the charity, and it's for epilepsy. And all the money goes to a specific doctor in Northwestern who's working on a line of cure. And this year we raised $1 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, close. I'm rounding it up.
Still.
But
wow.
Not bad. Yeah.
It's
a huge music event, just for your listeners. Massive. It's star-studded. It's amazing. It's a week long. It's in Madison. It's the first week in January of every year. And it's grown from starting in a bowling alley where hit maker Freddie Johnston sang a bunch of tunes with his friends, the know-it-all boyfriends, and they raised a few $100, and all of a sudden it got bigger every year. And this year was the biggest by far. And it was stars galore, including comedy legend, Wisconsin native Joel Hodgson, who has teamed up with Wayne White. You know who that is?
I don't know Wayne White. I know Joel Hodgson, obviously.
Wayne White is a very famous artist. He designed Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, yeah. I think you've talked about him before, yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah. And so it's like Hodgson and White are new. It's the new thing Joel's doing. And I'm in everybody's backup band, and I was lucky enough to be in that backup band, which was hilarity, a night of hilarity. Their premiere of their new act went really well. And that's just one of the many, many things that happens at Joey's Song.
I absolutely love this. I did something on Joey's Song last year, but we had just launched the show, and this year it crept up so fast, and after the holidays it was already gone. So I completely missed it this year, but next year we'll have to do something special for the event, Frank, and maybe you could come back. I'm sure you'll be back before then, but maybe we could do something.
You and Conrad should do a road trip and broadcast from there. The guests, you're going to have stars every night.
Wow. Yeah,
I would love to do that. Beyond,
And how did comedy go over? Is this the first year they did comedy, or?
Well, it was a specific comedy night. It was it was done at the High Noon Saloon, which is near the Sylvie, which is the headquarters of Joey's Song, which is a 2,500 seat venue, and the High Noon Saloon is, I believe, 400 or something like that, and it was. It was packed. It was good. It was the first time these guys had ever done their show. And we rehearsed for it that afternoon for the very first time. And it went without a hitch. It was fantastic. One hitch was the famous Dr. Z couldn't make it. You're familiar with him, right?
Yes, but tell me anyway, because I'm blanking. I know the name.
Dr. Z. Well, then we're Dana Gould.
Oh, Dana Gould.
Dana Gould, the famous writer of The Simpsons, and
love Dana.
So much more. Yeah, you know Dana.
Sure.
Dana plays Dr. Z on his own show, Hanging with Dr. Z, on YouTube. And everybody look it up, because if you're of a certain age, it's fall-down funny humor. And Dr. Z was supposed to make an appearance, but the L.A. fires coincided with Joey's Song.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. And you mentioned that. I was thinking someone totally different for Dr. Z. I didn't realize that was Dana's character, but he is hilarious. And his social media posts are so, like, just stinging and funny. Like, he's brilliant. And it's no surprise to me that he ended up writing for The Simpsons. Always liked Dana Gould.
Well, he'll be back on board with Hodgson and White.
Okay.
And we're doing a four-nighter in Chicago, dates yet to be named.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Any idea when that'll be, Frank?
They're talking about the fall.
Okay.
And then they're talking about a lot more than that, and I'm not allowed to say. again.
Okay. You just mentioned one of many backup bands I'm in. You literally, the movie 20 Feet from Stardom could have been you, except you're kind of a star in your own right. But still, you've played with some amazing people. You must just be in your element when you're at Joey's Song.
It completely.
Yeah.
It's like being in my living room.
So I'm going to ask you, we'll do the news, then we'll come back and dive deeper into this. But have you ever played with the legendary Bob Dylan?
No, I have not.
Okay. I know you're not that
old. I have not.
I know
steel players who have.
Yeah.
And I've heard, you've got to be tough to head out on that tour because it is, it's named the Never-Ending Tour. And it's constant playing.
Right.
And if you can take that kind of dislocation, which touring brings, you got to be a tough person to handle that.
I think you're pretty tough, Frank. But we'll do the news. we'll do the news, and then we'll come back. We're going to have a little talk about Bob Dylan, because I love the movie A Complete Unknown. You haven't seen it yet, but you can educate us a little bit on Bob Dylan. I know the basics, but I'm looking forward to that. And then we'll talk cockfighting. That's a segment right there, folks. That's radio at its finest, and we're going to do it all on the other side of the news with our pal Frank Anderson. Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's come together. WGBW rock star Nikki Zirjev will be here. Nikki's always fun to have on the show. And treasure hunter Bill Blackwell. With a name like Blackwell, you pretty much have to hunt treasure. That's tomorrow night on Nightlight. Right now, we are in the throes of a conversation with one of my favorite guests, Frank Anderson. He's the founder of WisconsinOlogy.com. Check it out. It's all things Wisconsin, from the interesting, the weird, the funny, to the just plain downright fascinating WisconsinOlogy.com. Frank is also a musician, producer, director, kind of a showbiz renaissance man. That's what I call you, Frank. It's great to have you here. So I wanted to ask you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Bob Dylan. I was kind of after his, my aunts and uncles growing up always talked about Bob Dylan. I know a lot of people think he's the greatest songwriter in the history of America, certainly in rock music, pop music, folk music, whatever. Where do you rank Dylan in terms of his greatness? And, the movie, A Complete Unknown, I know you haven't seen it, Frank, but it's about basically when he went from the acoustic guitar to the electric guitar. I want to know if you have thoughts on that. And just kind of, I wanted to get your thoughts on him because you've played with everybody.
Well, I agree. He's our greatest. It's hard to nail him down. He's such a chameleon. And my favorite thing about Bob Dylan is that he's a contrarian. And he's a contrarian's contrarian. And at his heart, his basic Bob Dylan-ness, he's just about being an entertainer. When he says, he always answered people, "I'm a song and dance man." And they thought he was joking, but he means it. And it's true. He loves the history of music in America, and he's written some of the greatest songs. He won't admit to that, but he's always been business savvy with all his songs. He was the first composer of the rock era to sell his music to Muzak
in
1970.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
a Bob Dylan song called Wigwam was sold, and it's officially the first ever from that era. And that was a big no-no, right? Muzak is the music of the man, meant to tame the masses.
Yeah.
Calm down. Don't revolt. but he's that way. I love his contrarianness, and I've always loved his music. And for different generations, they all see a different Bob Dylan. And for younger people, younger than me, people 30s, 40s, his greatest album is Blood on the Tracks, which is rather, you know, a later album for him. For us, the, you know, older ones, ones who were, I mean, I'm certainly not of the folk generation that first heard Bob strumming away and, you know, singing Blowing in the Wind. I mean, yeah. I saw that on TV, but not for real. For me, it's the Blonde on Blonde Nashville Skyline era, when he basically became one of the first, if not the first, to go to Nashville, you know, from the rock era to Nashville. And that was dangerous back then. I mean, if you were long hair or any association really? With counterculture, and they knew where your motel was, you're in trouble, you know. It was not easy. I mean, it was a pretty gutsy move. But he did get a haircut before he went, and foresight, right?
Yeah.
But what do you want? What do you want? I mean, I love Bob Dylan.
Well, there's some great scenes in the film between Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan, and they were pen pals, I guess. And Johnny Cash,
they were great friends.
Yeah,
and Johnny knew that Bob was a real American, true blue original, and Bob always knew that Johnny was a true blue original and way more a folk singer than he was a country singer.
Here's what I found fascinating, and I didn't realize this. I went to see the film with my parents, who are about Bob Dylan's age, and they didn't really listen to him when he first kind of started his music career. But the film starts with him going to see Woody Guthrie when he's 19. He just gets to New York, and he goes to see Woody Guthrie and plays this song for him. And, you know, it's so subjective. You could say this person's the greatest songwriter ever, this person, whatever. But Bob Dylan at 19 and at such a young age to write Blowin' in the Wind, blows my mind, Frank. I don't know if he was 19 when he wrote it, but I assume it was written shortly after he got to New York because he left Minnesota or wherever he had come from. You know.
Oh, are you ready for the Wisconsinology Bob Dylan?
Yes. Fact? I knew you'd bring it back to
that. The place he left to go to New York City on that fateful trip was Madison, Wisconsin.
Wow. Please explain.
There's not much to it. He's hanging out with friends, crashing at an apartment, but that's where he took the bus, the final leg of his journey. And he did write, you know, have you had Trapper Shep on your show?
You know what? I have not. And I think we swapped an email, and it just hasn't worked out yet, but thank you for reminding me. I got to reach out.
You should have. Yeah. For your listeners, Bob wrote a song he never recorded called On Wisconsin.
Yes.
And it is really... I nearly broke down in tears. It's like he's honoring this state like more than the song On Wisconsin, the one we all know.
I've heard that song. Yeah, it's a great song. I actually have heard that.
He really loves being in Wisconsin. So, Trapper Shep recorded it, co-put music to Bob's words, and is the only co-written song with Bob Dylan ever.
That is really cool. He, you know, it's funny too. I did stand up in Hibbing, Minnesota, and I was like 23. I was very young when I went on the road, and I was like, "Oh, Bob Dylan's from here." I was like, "Oh, cool." Like now, I would go, "Where did he grow up? Where did he go to high school? I need to see these places." You know, but I wish I could go.
You know what's interesting? Bob does that himself when he's on the road.
Really?
He'll take the tour bus and go, "We're doing a detour. I want to see Neil Young's hometown. I want to see where he grew up. Wow. I want to see where he played." He does that all the time.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, when I think back, when I did stand up and I would go to these different cities, I took advantage of it sometimes, but not nearly as much as I should have. And when you get older, you're more fascinated by history anyway, I think.
And for Bob Dylan, it's pop culture.
Okay.
You know, he met Val Kilmer for the very first time. And, he recited one of Val's famous lines from Tombstone right up to his face. He just wanted to say, you know, what's that famous line? Oh, dear.
I'll be a huckleberry.
Same scene, later. No, first line. He says to Johnny the Curly Ringo. Bill.
Johnny Ringo.
Or Ringo. Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like a man crossed over your grave. He walked right up to Val Kilmer and said that, and Val got all weird and walked away.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
awful.
And I
thought that was cool.
I think that's incredibly cool. You know what's cool is I was, you know, looking at some videos today of Dylan and the Byrds. I'm a big fan of the Byrds. And I know they've played together and they covered Mr. Tambourine Man that Dylan wrote. But I think there was a performance. I don't know if you've ever seen this, Frank, but the Byrds with David Crosby, who was an original member, which I didn't know until a couple of years ago, they were playing Mr. Tambourine Man and Dylan walks out on stage and the place goes nuts. And it's kind of weird because Dylan looked like he was kind of half singing. And then Roger McGuinn walked over like he kind of wanted to be by Dylan, but Dylan went to David Crosby and the two of them were singing. It was this weird, dysfunctional.
He's always half singing.
Yeah. What is that? I mean,
he's a contrarian. If you're on stage and you're going, if you're in 4/4 time, he's going to do another time. He always does that. Every single clip, he's playing to a different band than you are, you know, if you're on stage.
Oh, that's really
I think that's funny.
Go ahead.
Oh,
sorry,
by the way, that's the only other co-write that is claimed, but Bob won't allow that to be claimed, is that he and McGuinn are the co-writers of the Ballad of Easy Rider.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. That doesn't seem
and like it a... kind of is, because Dylan wrote the first line. That's it.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess he's got a legitimate... legitimate beef there. Hey, Frank, I don't know if I've shared this with you before, but before we move on to cockfighting, which we absolutely must, you just said that Dylan sold his catalog to Muzak or whatever. And I, you know, and you said that was a big no-no. And I remember being so judgmental when I was younger until I saw an interview with Bob Seger. I think it was on the show CBS This Morning or something. And he was questioned when he sold his song Like a Rock to Chevy. And they said, you took some criticism for that. How do you justify that? You know, you're an artist. And he said, well, here's how. He said, that song with Chevy trucks saved a lot of jobs. And it sold a lot of trucks and saved a lot of jobs. And I just felt like the biggest dope ever, Frank. I'm like, this guy is still of the people. You know, he sold the song for the people. Like, what's better than that, right?
Nothing better.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with the commerce end of it. And once again, Bob Dylan's a pioneer of that.
Yeah, but I guess I don't understand like the activist angle or and I guess you're right. Why not cash in? You wrote it. Do what you want with it.
Bob Dylan's folk self contributed to that, you know, I'm not working for the man. That whole attitude that Crosby was just.
Yeah,
well, he was addled, drug addled, but everything was about the man and this and that. And then and Crosby, who's so much of the people, right, that he went on his 1974 tour with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and demanded that they have monogrammed towels in every hotel they stay at.
Really?
Yeah, David Crosby, his own monogram towels, probably never even used him.
Look, the guy looks like he's never even used a comb. Like,
yeah,
that's crazy.
But they were spending and making money and doing coke like mad on that tour. And, you know, their whole line of whatever purity of youth or the rebellion was clearly over by then.
My guest is Frank Anderson. Check out Wisconsinology.com. It's great. We are going to move into the second most popular sport in the world, as I understand it, Frank, cockfighting.
Damn right. Yeah.
I owe all this to you because I saw your Facebook post. It started, you grew up in the Philippines or part of your childhood,
and
cockfighting was huge there. And you said your brother owned a, I still can't say it.
My brother had a fighting cock. Okay, fighting rooster. How about that?
Well, you can look. That's a thing. I mean, we're not doing anything here. It is live radio,
it's cockfighting.
Yeah,
so big in the Philippines. I can't tell you how big it is. It's ridiculous. We're from the southern Philippines. We were born, and my older brother completely raised there. He's buried there. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's some time ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was the most Filipino of all of us. And he had a fighting cock. And, man, his pride in that bird and the excitement of down in the cockpit. You know, that's what they call it, where the birds fight.
Yeah.
The cockpit. And the excitement and everything, and the, it's so macho.
Yeah, I don't get, that's so funny that it's macho, and the guys that are macho aren't even doing the fighting.
It's macho. You are your bird. And what, once again, where we're from, which Mindanao, southern Mindanao, Basilan Island, it still is, so macho.
And it's still legal there.
It's a national sport. You can't, it's like saying, oh, no more football. Hey, America, no more. You come in and say, wow, you know, no more cockfighting. Oh, good luck with that.
Are concussions an issue in cockfighting? I would imagine that.
I don't know if the birds know it. Yeah. I have no idea.
Oh, man, it's just awful. It's only been illegal here in the States. Reading about this earlier, Louisiana finally outlawed it in 2008, and I'm sure everybody thought their rights were being infringed upon and everything. But
right.
But maybe we'll talk about this after a very short break, too. I might want to ask you, Frank, what you're watching, if you've seen any of the Oscar films, too. So noodle that.
Okay.
And then if you haven't, that's fine, too. I've got a Wisconsinology story I can bring up. So we'll have more with our pal Frank Anderson on the other side of a very short break. Don't go anywhere. It's a Monday night on Nightlight, folks. We're doing it. Great to have you.
Problem building towers for science.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Honey, you are my shining star. Don't you go away. Oh, baby.
Just in case you guys are wondering, Frank mentioned it would be like taking the Super Bowl away or football away in America. In Manila, the World Slasher Cup, that's what it's called, is the Super Bowl of cockfighting. So that was actually a pretty good analogy, Frank. World Slasher Cup, that's so horrible.
It goes back 3,000 years.
It's nuts. Are the commercials just as bad during the World Slasher Bowl?
I have not seen them.
Okay.
Although I might do it this year.
Frank, what... go ahead. Sorry about that.
My brother was a lot more macho than me.
You have kind of a quiet macho to you. I sense that if you scratch the surface, you'll see a burgeoning macho individual in you. You come across as this jovial guy, but I know there's a fire burning below.
Well, back in the Philippines, everybody wanted to be Charlie Bronson.
Oh, that's great.
That was a real compliment.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. My guest is Frank Anderson. Check out Wisconsinology.com. We always have fun talking to Frank here about various stories from Wisconsinology. Before we get to that, Frank, and maybe we won't have time, I don't know, but have you seen any of the Oscar films?
I've seen Wicked.
Okay. What'd you think?
I saw the play. I really liked it. The movie's good as long as, you know what it looked? It looked like they filmed it at the Universal Theme Park Wicked set. I mean, yes. I enjoyed it. Kids love it. Families love it. The whole world loves it. But when I look at it, it looked like they built the sets so that they could immediately take them apart and move them to Universal Florida, you know, for the Wicked ride. And that bugged me a little. But the movie, I thought the movie was great as long as people were flying and doing aerial work, and there was, you know, a lot of stunt work going on. Kind of dragged when they got down to just emoting.
Talking, yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because I agree with you. I didn't think of it then, but they did actually shoot at locations. I mean, that's what I think makes this, you know, it's part of the spectacle is all the just the minutia and all the detail that went into all that from the director. So it's funny you say that.
Well,
I don't think he'd like to hear
it's
that.
It's a fascinating franchise to have a work, you know, The Wizard of Oz, which is out of copyright, right?
Yeah.
But that's not your franchise. Your franchise is the reimagining of it, which only dates back to 1994. So incredible. Universal has this thing that's going to be paying out like mad for the next 100 years.
Are you watching anything, Frank? Binge watching anything you could recommend?
There's nothing on.
Come on. Seriously?
Name some stuff. I've seen everything. Name something that's new and fresh and happening right now.
Well, I liked Black Doves.
Oop, I haven't seen that. Okay. Write that one down.
Have you seen any of the Taylor Sheridan shows? And if so, have you liked any of them?
I liked it initially. Yellowstone I did initially.
Same.
And it kind of jumped the tracks.
Somewhere in season two. Yeah, I turned it off. Yeah.
And I thought it was great breath of fresh air, you know.
Yeah.
I love rural stuff like that. And, you know, I was a ranch hand once, long ago.
What?
I was a shit shoveler. And I loved it. I just loved it. And then it got off, and then, you know, 1923, is that the one with Harrison Ford?
Yes, I like that one a lot, actually, and 1883. I like both the prequels.
Oh, that one, yes. Are there any more?
Another season of 1923 is coming out. Hey, have you seen Green and Gold? Because the guy from 1923, Brandon Sklenar, is in Green and Gold, the movie about the Packers that just was released last weekend.
No, I haven't seen it. Okay. I know who worked on it.
Yeah.
But I've not seen it. I don't know. I saw the word love. you know what I'm getting at. Love
letter
to Wisconsin. And you know what that does to me. But I've not seen it, so I have no way of knowing it.
I think
more.
As long as it's not the filmmakers saying that, I can get past it. I understand your beef. But I think it might be critics that say that.
It might be cool. I mean, it's about a farmer, right? A local guy. It's not about, let's say, a young man or woman who goes to the big city, strikes out, swears they'll never return to their hometown, and what happens?
He goes back to find love. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was right there in front of him all along, Frank.
The real meaning of life.
That's right. Hey, this is always fun. Thank you so much, buddy, for your time. Let's do it again soon. I got a whole bunch of stuff we didn't even get to, but we'll do that.
We'll do that. Yeah, great. Thanks for having me.
Underwater Necropolis. Remind me of that. We'll do that next time because that's on Wisconsin.
Oh, we have to do that.
I love that one. Okay, buddy. Thanks so much, Frank.
Okay.
And talk to you soon. Have a great night.
You too.
All right. That's Frank Anderson. Check out Wisconsinology.com if you haven't already. It's one of those sites, folks. If you love Wisconsin, you could get lost in it. And even if you don't like Wisconsin, there's just really interesting, fascinating stories. So what are you telling me? Are you saying we're number one, Conrad, or we have 1 minute left?
No, we're number one.
Can you do that in a big Packer foam finger?
Sure.
We're number one. Or
yeah, there we go.
All right, we got a great show tomorrow. As I mentioned, Nikki Zirjav will be here in studio. Always so much fun to have. Do we know if Nikki's coming in?
Yeah, she should be coming in.
I think she's
here.
Coming in,
yeah.
Right? Okay. And then we'll talk to Bill Blackwell, treasure hunter, first treasure hunter we've had on Nightlight. He's coming in tomorrow at 7:35. He's not coming in. He'll be here via the stream at 7:35. Thank you for all. Oh, we have a Steady Eddie text I got to get to.
We have about 20 seconds.
20 seconds. Pete, Punxsutawney Phil, don't believe nothing he says. He's a shill for snow, ice, and chill. Forget about him. That crooked rodent on the streets of brotherly love, he's known as a whistle pig. I wouldn't trust him if I were you, Pete, because he's either going to squeal or put you on ice and snow. I hear he runs cold and shady underground crime syndicate with a maze of tunnels and connections that run from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh to Scranton. Go with Jimmy the Groundhog from Sunny Spring Lake, Sun Prairie. Jimmy the Groundhog, if you play your cards right, Pete, he might just give you a little love and then a little. Steady Eddie, we'll finish this tomorrow. We got to go. Thank you all so much. I'm sorry we ran out of time. Good night.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.